It's a trap!
Hello and welcome to episode number 59 of Radio TCX,
your weekly source for X-Wing news and strategy.
I'm Tim Dugan.
And I'm Carson Ray.
So a few weeks ago, when Fantasy Flight spoiled the new Pulse Ray Shield modification card in the C-Rock expansion article, we started talking about some of its application, particularly looking at the Sick Interceptor, both the old pilots and the new pilots.
But the fun with Pulse Ray Shield doesn't just stop at the Six. It's also applicable to the Cuirass Fighter, the Star Viper, and the Hawk 290, both the Scum and Rebel versions. So today, we're going to discuss where we think it's going to be best applied.
So let's get to it. All right, so there are four ships that can use the Pulse Ray Shield. So obviously it can be used on the Sick Interceptor, but it can also be used, like you said, Carson, on the Cuirass Fighter, the Star Viper, and both the Scum Hawk and the Rebel Hawk, which I would consider those Hawks to be different types of ships because what you're going to do with them is often very different depending on how they work within their own factions. So we should probably start our discussion by actually going over what the new Pulse Ray Shield card does. This is a 2-point modification, and it reads, Rebel and Scum Only Modification. During the end phase, you may receive one ion token to recover one shield, up to your shield value. You can equip this card only if your shield value is one.
And so that's where we get only certain ships that this applies to. There's the four Scum ships and then the one Rebel ship.
And looking just kind of at the overall design of this card, particularly that one shield restriction, clearly this is a card designed to help a lot of the ships that don't see as much play or are not considered as viable in the X-Wing metagame. Most of these ships have not been considered viable even upon their release.
And regen is one of the most powerful effects in X-Wing, the ability to bring shields back after they've been removed. We've seen it with R2-D2, Astromech and crew bringing shields back, Miranda Donnie's pilot ability allowing her to regenerate shields, and even a bit the Gonk crew card allowing Scum some regeneration.
We already discussed our feelings on this card initially and its application with the Sick Interceptor in episode 56, so if you guys want to hear that or haven't heard it yet, please check out episode 56. But let's start off by looking at the Cuirass. So the Cuirass is a ship that I don't think saw any substantial competitive play upon its release or any time since.
Yeah, and I may be wrong that we even forgot to mention that Pulse Ray worked on the Cuirass, because I often forget that this ship exists in the X-Wing game.
Well, and that's a real bummer, too, because when the Cuirass initially came out, my hope for it was that it would fill in this kind of mid-range point-costed ship that we didn't have in the Scum faction at that point. This was pretty early on in Scum and Villainy's existence as a faction, and there was kind of a disparity between, like, the Star Viper and just a Y-Wing. There was not many ships that fit within that point range. So the hope was that the Cuirass would be something that would fill in that mid-costed point range, the kind of 20-something points to 30-point range, and I think that's what it was intended to do. The problem was it was just not a very strong choice, I think, for a number of reasons.
Well, the model of a 5-hit-point ship with just 2 agility is not great to start with. Even at the time the Cuirass was released, that was not cutting it on jousting efficiency.
It kind of suffered some of the same issues that we saw with the T-65 X-Wing, where this ship had a lot of similarities to that ship, and that ship was already not viable in the competitive game, barring Biggs Darklighter as a pilot.
One advantage the Cuirass did bring over the X-Wing was its cheapest generic was 20 points, so you could put 5 of them in a list. But even that was not quite good enough, not necessarily because of the survivability there, but so all those ships will be at pilot skill 2, and the risk of getting outpositioned was pretty high. It didn't take long for any ship to be able to whittle down one or two of those Cuirass fighters, and then your offensive output against the aces was just not enough. Whereas 4 B-Wings and a Z-95 has just a bit more staying power with almost the same offensive output, and barrel rolling actions allowing them to block and create different arc patterns.
Yeah, so even the 5 Cuirass list as a jousting list was outclassed by other better, stronger, more efficient jousting lists. And still the overall problem with the jousting list is that a good ace list, or like triple aces, could easily outposition those ships and start picking them off one at a time. And by the time you get down to just, you know, two or three Kirazes, they're not efficient enough to put damage out on like a Soontrafel or an Inquisitor.
And then on the far end of the spectrum, you have Talonbane Cobra, who is a high damage ace who absolutely could push damage through on any other ace at range one, where he gets to double his range bonus. But you have that same risk of survivability. So you have an expensive ace ship, mid 30s points, and it still has five hit points defended by two green dice.
Well, and one of the fundamental problems with Talonbane, because Talonbane Cobra was kind of Fenrau before Fenrau was Fenrau. He is a pilot skill 9, 28-point Kiraz with the ability, when attacking or defending, double the effect of your ranged combat bonuses. So when he's attacking at range 1, he rolls his 3 attack dice plus the range 1 bonus of 1, and that's doubled, so he's rolling 2 additional attack dice for a total of 5, which is something now that we see Fenrau do all the time. One of the huge problems here is the action bar on the Kiraz. They have no native repositioning actions. So even at a high pilot skill, you had to be very good at predicting where your opponent was going to be in order to make sure you could get them in your arc at range one. And even then, it's not the most efficient ship, so you weren't able to necessarily guarantee you had all the modification necessary to really leverage the strength of those five attack dice.
All right, so that's why the Kiraz hasn't been in play that much. Will Pulse Ray bring it back? I think with the generics, not so much. I think that, okay, even at 22 points, well, now we can't get five of them. It's still not quite where I want to be. And so even at, like, say, 26 points with the pilot skill 5, with the pulse ray shield and, say, a Tawny Mind Link, I think I'd rather take a 6 moving forward with the pulse ray shield. I think the one hit point difference versus the one green die, I'd rather have the extra green die.
Not to mention the better action bar that the Sick has with a barrel roll and a native evade action.
Right, and you're probably getting some sort of pilot ability there.
I think the lower pilot skill of the name pilots too is not a strong option. Graz the Hunter.
Graz is garbage. Talonbane, there might be some use.
I think one reason, just in general, that Pulse Ray Shield is a reasonable choice on the Kiraz is because they don't really have any other mod options, so you're not missing out on your mod slot being used for something else. You're generally not going to put an engine upgrade on these ships.
Well, you might put a vectored thrusters, just because 2 points for some repositioning is not terrible for, say, Talonbane, but I think I like the pulse ray shields better.
Well, yeah, and as a jouster, so one of the penalties you have to take to use pulse ray shields to get your shield back is that you have to suffer that ion token, which means the following turn you're going to perform a one straight white maneuver in order to clear that ion token. You'll still get actions assuming you're not stressed, and this could be a huge penalty for some ships, but I don't think it's such a huge penalty on a ship that's really meant for jousting.
Right. The only scenario I think it might be rough is with Talonbane, where you're at 3 range 3, and then you want to guarantee you close into range 1. You might not want the one straight there, but sometimes you might. I don't know.
So I think maybe the biggest holdup, the thing you have to get around with whether or not you want to run Talonbane in your squad, is his point cost compared to the high pilot skill Protectorate Starfighters. So if you load out, a reasonable loadout on Talonbane is probably going to bring you into the low 30s point range for that ship, which is also where our two aces, Fenrau and Old T from the Protectorate, fall in generally. So you're going to have to decide, well, would I rather have Talonbane in a low 30s point ship, or would I rather have Fenrau? And just on the face value, I think Fenrau is generally the stronger choice.
Fenrau is absolutely the stronger choice. The only reason you're taking Talonbane in your squad is if you've already also got Fenrau. And even then, Talonbane might be your third best ship for explosive damage.
Yeah, so we threw together a quick Tawny Mind Link squad using Fenrau, Old T, and Talonbane. We're looking at your standard Tawny Mind Link, Fenrau, and Old T, where they both have Tawny Mind Link, Conquer, Dawn Protector, and Auto Thrusters. We also had some extra points, so we tossed Flechette Torpedoes on both of them, giving them some stress control, which is so popular right now. And then we included a 33-point Talonbane Cobra. So he's got Tawny Mind Link, a Cloaking Device, and Pulsed Ray Shield.
Yeah, so here this is 3 ace ships jamming into range 1. Terok strips all the tokens, and Fenrau and Talonbane Cobra both roll 5 dice primary weapons, hopefully with target lock focus because of Mind Link.
Well, and thanks to Mind Link too, you have the potential to get 2 focus tokens on Talonbane, which is a huge deal when you're doubling his ranged combat bonus when he's defending at range 3. Because even getting an extra 2 defense dice doesn't matter much if you don't have any ways to modify them. Having 2 focus tokens would go a long way in keeping Talonbane alive.
Another Talonbane Fenrau old T list that I got from Ryan Farmer from the Minox Squadron podcast, who is, I think, one of the biggest Talonbane enthusiasts there is Fenrau an old T with Atani Mind Link, Concord Dawn Protector, and Auto Thrusters. And then Talonbane Cobra with Mind Link, Homing Missiles, Scavenger Crane, and Pulse Ray Shield. So instead of using the cloaking device to close the gap to range 1, you get to threaten Talonbane at all the different ranges. So ideally, I think you want to shoot a range 3 homing missile and then move into range 1. And obviously, Talonbane is the most expensive ship in that list, but the Pulse Ray Shield does provide a decent deterrent for trying to focus him down. Because at the range 3, you're probably not pushing too much damage through unless you're using cannons or other munitions to mitigate his double range 3 bonus.
So I think our consensus, Carson, would be that Talonbane can be a strong choice, assuming that your list already contains Fenrau and probably old T.
So there's some niche options there. So that list, both versions, you're basically trying to leverage those enhanced offensive outputs of both Fenrau and Talonbane.
So, Carson, let's look at what I think is one of the saddest ships in X-Wing. We both flew Star Vipers in a competitive format, I'd say extensively, trying to make them work, and we both learned that they were just not reliable enough. What do you think, Carson, is kind of the fundamental problems that we see with the Star Viper?
Well, think of all of the reasons the Jumpmaster 5000 is great, and those are all of the reasons that the Star Viper is not. So it's got a kind of terrible dial for an ace ship.
The saddest part being its limited range of green maneuvers. It's only got 1, 2, and 3 straight greens and then just 1 bank greens. So it's really not a good target for push the limit.
Well, and having the sloop options without any K-turn options is also kind of rough. Whereas both the aggressor and the protectorate have either sloops or talon rolls and a long K-turn.
Yeah, that makes them way less predictable, whereas generally your opponent knows where you want to point your firing arc, so that makes one sloop option a lot more obvious than the other sometimes.
Now they also have low pilot skills, so it makes it hard to leverage the advantage of having the boost and barrel roll action.
Yeah, the 2 aces for the Star Viper, Guri at pilot skill 5 and Prince Zizor at pilot skill 7, it's always shocked me that those are the pilot skills they assigned when it seems to me it would make a lot more sense if they were a 6 and 8 respectively, because then suddenly having to use VI doesn't seem like such a bad thing because you can get Zizor all the way up to 10.
So usually they don't have an elite pilot talent slot because you have to use that for veteran instincts. And then to get the modification you need the system slot, which they get access to via the Virago title, which is a unique 1-point title, which I hate paying points to get slots for upgrade options, which was why originally the Heavy Seek title was bad.
It's also the reason the B-Wing E2 title is not a great choice either, because you're already putting an investment in there, an opportunity cost investment in there by taking up this slot. And it's weird that the Virago title does have a cost in that it already kind of has a cost by being unique, so you're only going to get to use this on one ship anyway.
I think for the Star Viper moving forward to be useful, the Virago title would need to give a +2 pilot skill and some added green maneuvers.
And these are just a handful of the issues the Star Viper has. It's really hard to pinpoint exactly what's wrong with it because it's just kind of across the board not a strong ship in so many kind of interlocked, sad little intricacies.
Right, and all X-Wing players want the Star Viper to be viable because everyone owns it because you need the auto thruster cards that are exclusive to the Star Viper kit. That, and it's, I think, one of the coolest models to date. But I don't think Pulse Ray Shield is even close to enough for the Star Viper to be viable again. Mainly because the Star Vipers, you're always taking auto thrusters with them. And I think auto thrusters might even be a better option than Pulse Ray Shield for them.
Well, yeah, just comparing the 2 modifications, they both come in at 2 points. but auto thrusters is way more likely to trigger more frequently. And auto thrusters allows the potential to avoid damage entirely, which is way better than what pulse ray shield promises, which means once your shield is gone, you can get it back. That means you already took damage. It's way better to never take that damage than to get damage back.
Absolutely. And the limit to doing just the one straight, I think, is a pretty big setback for the Star Viper. It wants to leverage the right maneuver because it can't really afford to use too many actions repositioning because it can't really push the limit and get defensive mods without those actions.
So on the whole, I'd say that the Star Viper does not really benefit from pulse ray shields, which means it's still going to have to sit on the sideline until they come up with a better solution to make the ship more viable. Hey guys, time for a quick Patreon update. We are going to be announcing our April raffle winners next week. In order to qualify for that raffle, you needed to become a patron of Radio TCX before the beginning of April, so by the end of March. If you'd like to be eligible for next month's raffle, please consider going on to patreon.com/radioTCX and becoming a patron today.
And now back to the cast.
All right, so let's talk about the last two ships here affected by pulse ray shield, which are technically one ship, but their applications in different factions are very different. Let's start by sticking with the Scum and Villainy faction with the Hawk 290, but the Scum variety.
Well, let's first start with why Hawks in general haven't been seen that much.
Now, amongst the four ships that can take this upgrade card, the Sick, the Kiraz, the Star Viper, and the Hawk has been the most viable. It's the most likely you're going to see in a competitive game, though it's still not a dominating force in X-Wing.
Right, and I think that is part of the reason that the Hawk also stands perhaps the most to gain from pulse ray shield. So the Hawk is an interesting ship where there's something holding it back, but then there's also a lot of reasons to run Hawks. They have a pretty terrible dial. It's debatably the worst. You could say the Lambda's dial is worse because it has red two turns, but it also has the stop, which is a sweet maneuver. Whereas the Hawk just has a white two turn, a few greens, and its three speed maneuvers are red.
Well, and one of the other issues that it has is that it absolutely needs a turret weapon because it's only got a primary weapon value of one. So you need all of your ships to have some capability of doing damage, even if that's not their main focus, having them on the table, like it would be with a support ship like the Hawk. But you need some way to put damage out there. So that means you're going to need a turret on your Hawk, and that means a greater point investment into this support ship.
And so then you're also limited by the range of the turret you use. So like a Y-Wing with a twin laser turret is still somewhat viable when an opponent gets into range one. It still gets to roll three dice if you got arc, whereas a Hawk is only rolling two dice at range one. And if you choose to go for a more cheaper turret option, like a dorsal turret or an auto blaster turret or something, well, then if you're ever trying to shoot an opponent at range three, you're functionally doing nothing. You're rolling one attack dice. They're probably rolling at least two attack dice then at that scenario.
Well, and continuing with the comparison to, say, a Y-Wing, you also have the survivability to cost ratio problem with the Hawk. With only four hull and one shield, this ship is one that could easily be taken out in a single round of fire.
Right. And so, I mean, there's definitely ways to increase your defensive output. Cloaking device on the Scum Hawks has been a popular way. Okay, I can cloak in. A lot of their pilot abilities trigger at like range one to two. So I can cloak, get in close, and then use like Stygian Particle Accelerator to get like an evade token. There's also the Moldy Crow title, which lets you stockpile focuses, making your two green dice more substantial. But that gets even more expensive.
Right, Carson. Because Cloaking Device is such a popular choice, the Stygian Particle Accelerator modification is also a strong choice on these Hawks. Stygian, of course, when you cloak or decloak, you can take a free evade action.
Right, and so with the Cloaking Hawks, I think there's going to be some debate on whether or not Stygian or Particle is going to be better. And that's kind of like the Auto Thrusters Star Viper issue. Is that evading the initial damage going to be worth more than the recursive regeneration?
Well, yeah, the two most popular Scum Hawk 290 pilots are Torkoal Mux, who allows you to, at the end of the activation phase, choose one enemy ship at range 1 to 2. Until the end of the combat phase, treat that ship's pilot skill value as 0. And then you also have the ever-popular Polyb Gadalhi, who allows you to, at the start of the combat phase, you can select a ship at range 1 to 2 and steal one of its focus or evade tokens.
I think if you're going with the Pulse Ray on a Scumhawk, you probably want to move away from Cloaking Device, which does free up some more points, because if you're taking Cloaking and Stygium, that's 4 points, whereas the Pulse Ray is just 2. So this you'll fly a little differently.
But I think there's still an argument to be made that Pulse Ray Shield could be a strong choice here.
But that lets you keep those Hawks lean, which with Scum, where they now have efficient options at so many different point costs, it's important to keep it lean because that allows you to fit stuff it with your other ships. So to utilize the approach Pulse Ray Shield provides for the Hawks, I threw together a quick list of Torkoal Mux with Twin Laser Turret, 4 LOM Crew, and the Pulse Ray Shield. So just 28 points with 2 Syndicate Thug Y-Wings with Twin Laser Turret and R4 Agromech. So the heavier damage output Twin Laser Turret Y-Wings. And a Jakku Gunrunner with Katsuono Pattern Analyzer and Space Tug Tractor Array. So,
and those are all really low pilot skill ships, but you're really leveraging then Torkoal Mux's ability to reduce your opponent's high pilot skill ships down to 0.
Right. So you have all low pilot skills, so you're getting the maximum value from Torkoal, dropping a ship from whatever to 0. And hopefully that's the same ship you tractor beamed with the Jakku Gunrunner. So now you've lowered its agility, so all 3 of your Twin Laser Turret ships can put a lot of hurt on it. And this makes it really difficult for your opponent to combat you because they can't get too close to your squad because there's the threat of the tugboat tractor beaming them, which, if you do it right, can pull them out of the Twin Laser Turret donut and set them up for perhaps death that round.
Well, you've always got some added synergy, too, from the 4 LOM crew card combined with the Pulse Ray Shield.
Right, and so with 4 LOM, you can use that on both the rolls. 4 LOM reads, when attacking during the modify attack dice step, you may receive 1 ion token to choose one of the defender's focus or evade tokens. That token can't be spent during this attack. And then, of course, Pulse Ray Shield, if you're utilizing it, will give you an ion token. So Torkoal's usually one of the early threats in this type of list. And so your opponent wants to try and force him down. So you're probably going to be Pulse Raying every turn. So the added ion tokens from 4 LOM are not really going to matter at all.
Right, because at the start of your following turn, you're not going to set a dial, but even if you have 3 ion tokens on Torkoal, they're all going to clear after you perform that one white straight maneuver. So if you're already using 4 LOM, there's no reason not to use Pulse Ray Shield.
So here we have like a pretty cheap end Hawk, 28 points, with a lot of other efficient ships. On the Rebel side, they're going to be more expensive, I think.
Yeah, so the Rebel Hawks suffer from mostly the same problems that the Scum and Villainy Hawks do. They don't have strong dials, they still have that survivability issue, and they still need a turret to function properly. But they can also very much benefit from Pulse Ray Shield.
So while the Scum Hawks really cripple your opponent's list synergies, the Rebel Hawks are best for boosting your own side synergies. So you have Jan Ors adding another red dice to an attack, Kyle Katarn passing focuses, aka the original Manaroo, at range 1 to 3. And then you have Rorik, who boosts one of your ships up to pilot skill 12. And of course, the generic Hawks, which nobody really uses.
Well, and because these ships focus more on synergy on your side, not affecting your opponent's ships, they're a much lesser threat to your opponent, whereas a Torkoal Mux or a Polyb Gadalhi might be the obvious first target for your opponent based on their impact against their list.
Yeah, another reason Rebel Hawks are not quite as good is they're a little bit more expensive. They're like 1 or 2 points more for their comparable alternative. And then usually, if you're playing Rebels, you probably want one of their crews on them, which can get more expensive as well.
But since they're not able to take the cloaking device and therefore have no need for a Stygium Particle Accelerator, there's not really an obvious modification that you'd put on a Rebel Hawk. So Pulse Ray Shield at 2 points seems like a decent cheap option to include on most any Hawk you're going to fly.
Right. So my first thought was to update a previous list of Kyle Katarn using his focus ability to support the Rebel ships who like focus tokens the best, Poe Dameron and Jake Farrell. So when Kyle passes a focus token to a friendly ship at range 1 to 3 at the start of the combat phase, either Jake can get a free action and then push the limit off of it at functionally like pilot skill 12 start of combat timing, so you can outposition even the highest pilot skill ships, or give Poe another focus token to use with sensor cluster, or allow Poe to use a target lock or boost action during his normal activation, and then give him the focus token later that he needs. So I got Poe Dameron with adaptability, R2-D2, sensor clusters, and auto thrusters, coming in at 39 points. Jake Farrell with push limit, proton rockets, A-wing test pilot, auto thrusters, and veteran instincts. And then Kyle Katarn coming in again at 28 points, just like Torkoal, but he's got trick shot, the dorsal turret, because I couldn't afford twin laser turret, Ray, and the pulse ray shield. So the Ray crew lets you, of course, build up focus tokens for when you need to use Kyle's ability later on in the game.
Yeah, so that list is very synergistic, and I've actually played against lists that leverage passing focus tokens and using Jake Farrell's ability, and it is shockingly effective. I mean, it sounds pretty good, but once you see it on the table and actually experience that really late movement modification from Jake getting a focus, barrel rolling, and boosting, it'll definitely catch you off guard the first couple times you play against it.
And actually having the dorsal turret on Kyle is not that bad here, because you really don't want Kyle to be threatening, because without him, the list does kind of crumple a bit. So you want to keep Kyle around, and you want just your opponent to be focusing on your scary ace ship. So having the dorsal turret and then now the pulse ray shield is like an added deterrent, because it's like, oh, I can kind of ignore that. It's just rolling 2 to 3 dice at me. Not that well modded. And if I shoot at it, it's going to regenerate.
So overall, pulse ray shield does help the Hawk 290, perhaps quite a bit more so than it does for the Star Viper or the Kiraz. Now there's a lot of interesting potential for lists, including Hawk 290s. We are definitely interested in hearing what you guys, our listeners, are coming up with. So if you come up with any cool list ideas, feel free to share them on our Facebook page or on our Twitter page. We'd really love to see that stuff. Thank you guys so much for listening to this episode of Radio TCX. If you enjoy the show, please consider going on to facebook.com/Radio TCX and liking our Facebook page.
You can follow us on Twitter at Radio TCX Podcast.
And if you really like the show, please consider going on to iTunes and leaving us a 5-star review with a comment saying what you like about the show and why other X-Wing players might be interested in listening.
And if you want to support the show directly, please go on to patreon.com/Radio TCX and become a supporter today.
Again, guys, thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you next week.